Again, my name is Dr. Karen Weaver. I'm your moderator. I'm a faculty member at Drexel. I'm very pleased to introduce George Scornickel, who's going to talk about there used to be a ballpark, the Baker Bowl, and the hump. Please welcome George.
Originally built at a cost of $101,000, the Baker Bowl, when it opened in 1887, was regarded as the finest stadium in the nation, a magnificent showplace that was the pride of Philadelphia and the envy of other cities. It was constructed by Philly's owner, A.J. Reach, and John Rogers. The park was initially known as the Philadelphia Baseball Park or Huntington Street Grounds. The name, the Baker Bowl, was chosen when William F. Baker became the owner of the team. And this is Mr. and Mrs. Baker. Built on a dump that was lower than street level, it took 100,000 wagon loads of dirt to fill the gullies on the field, and another 20,000 loads to bring the site even with the adjacent streets. The park incorporated brick instead of commonly used wood and pavilions for seating. The outside of the stadium, with a main entrance that looked more like a castle than a ballpark, was brick. Paneled brick with ornamental moldings also enclosed the playing field. The seating capacity was 12,500, with 5,000 seats in a pavilion housing 25 rows on one side of home plate, and 16 rows on the other end, and 7,500 seats in the grandstands that extended down the left and right field lines. No seats were in the outfield. In that dead ball era, the outfield wall was enclosed by a relatively low wall all around. Center field was fairly close, with the railroad tracks running behind. Reading railroad tracks paralleled the park across Broad Street, and later the tracks were lowered and the field extended on top of them, making the area some 10 feet higher from home plate. This was the famous hump. Outfielders occasionally felt the rumbling of the trains passing underneath them, and often locomotives would billow smoke or spray sparks on the grandstands, occasionally starting small fires on the wooden floors and seats. And you can see there how close the railroad actually was to the field. The ballpark's second incantation opened in 1895. Its upper deck was notable for having the first cantilever design in the sports stadium and was the first ballpark to be constructed primarily from steel and brick. It also took the rule book literally, as the sweeping curve behind home plate was about 60 feet. And instead of angling back toward the foul lines, the 60-foot-wide foul ground extended all the way to the wall and right and well down the left field line also. The spacious foul ground, while not fan-friendly, would have resulted in more foul flyouts than in most parks, and thus was probably the park's one saving grace in the minds of otherwise frustrated pitchers. The most notable and talked about feature of Baker Bowl was the right field wall. It was only 280 feet from home plate, with right center only 300 feet away, and with a wall and screen barrier that its final form was 60 feet high. By comparison, the Green Monster in Fenway Park is 37 feet high and 310 feet away. The Baker Wall was a rather difficult task to surmount. The wall was an amalgam of different materials. It was originally a relatively normal height structure. When it became clear it was too soft to home for home runs, the barrier was extended using more masonry, wood, and a metal and pipe screening. The masonry in the lower part of the wall was extremely rough. It was called the sort of surface that efficiently removes an outfielder's skin upon contact. Eventually, a layer of tin was laid over the entire structure, except for the upper part of the screen. The wall was famous for its advertisement for Lifebuoy soap along the length of the wall, stating the Phillies use Lifebuoy soap. Once someone got into the field and wrote under it, and they still stink. Before the Lifebuoy sign, the most prominent sign in the outfield was a Schmitz beer sign that reached from the clubhouse to the flagpole in right center field, and a Bull Durham tobacco sign in right field. Showing a picture of a huge bull ripping through the fence, the latter sign, which stood for many years, offered $50 to any player who hit a ball against the cutout of the bull. Another permanent advertisement that preceded the Bull Durham sign was an ad for a fly-catching product. Doug Pasker caught 209 flies last season, the sign read, but it said, our fly catcher caught 1,137,345. During the 51 and a half seasons the Phillies played there, they managed only one pennant in 1915. The 1915 World Series was significant because it was the first time a sitting president attended a World Series game when President Wilson attended and threw out the first pitch prior to Game 2. The series was also the first postseason appearance of Babe Ruth. Fire destroyed the grandstand and bleachers of the original stadium on August 6, 1894. The $80,000 in damage, equal to $2,148,000 today, was covered fully by insurance. Temporary stands were built in time for a game on August 18. It was then fully rebuilt of fireproof materials with a cantilevered upper deck. It also contained a bank bicycle track for some time, exploiting the cycling craze of the late 19th century. In terms of pure design, the ballpark was well ahead of its time, but subsequent problems in the attitude of the team's owners undermined any apparent positives, as the park soon became run down and unsafe. During a game on August 8, 1903, an altercation between two drunken men and two teenage girls in 15th Street caught the attention of the bleacher fans down the left field line. Many of them ran to the top of the wooden seating area, and the added stress on the section of the bleachers caused it to collapse into the street, killing 12 and injuring 232. This led to more renovation of the stadium and forced the ownership to sell the team. During a game on May 14, 1927, parts of two sections of the lower deck extension along the right field line collapsed due to rotted shoring timbers, again triggered by an oversized crowd gathering the people who were seeking shelter from the rain. Miraculously, no one died during the collapse, but one individual did have a heart failure in the subsequent stampede that injured 50. Overcrowding was often a problem, with fans sometimes placed in the outfield, and you can see the rope spread across the end of the outfield there with people standing in the sitting behind it. After both of these catastrophes, the Phillies rented from the A's while repairs were being made to the old structure. The field itself was kept in reasonable condition. Early in the 20th century, Sam Payne took over as head groundskeeper. For a number of years, he kept two ewes and a ram under the left field bleachers. Roaming the field when there was no game, the sheep served as grass cutters. Baker Bowl housed the livestock until 1925, when the ram charged the club official Billy Schittline. Schittline's escaped the ram's wrath, but soon afterwards, the sheep received their outright release. Not long after, Payne added 10 full-time members to his staff. One character, known as Sky Plover, sewed bank bags into each of his pockets and smuggled balls out of the park, which he sold to the neighborhood teams for 50 to 75 cents. A group of 20 to 25 neighborhood kids also held part-time jobs, helping to maintain the field and performing other miscellaneous tasks. The locker room was nothing to brag about. It had wooden floor and open lockers like bins. The players had to hang their clothes on nails. And once they were told that the locker room was going to be renovated, and all that meant was they put in new nails for them to hang their clothes on. Dugouts at the Baker Bowl were as crude as the rest of the park. Wooden boards served as benches on which the players sat. The dugouts were small and cramped, with none of the facilities found in modern dugouts. If you had to go to the bathroom, for example, you had to run across the field to the clubhouse. When a player was ejected or otherwise removed from a game, he would have to make his way across center field to the clubhouse, usually between innings. Because players left their gloves on the field between innings, there were no special facilities for storing gloves in the dugouts, nor were there such things as bat racks. The bats were stored in a room behind home plate. Before batting practice each game, they would put the bats in a wheelbarrow and bring them out in front of the dugout. Then they would lay them out in a row on the playing field right in front of the dugout. When a player went to bat, he'd come out, pick up his bat and a weighted bat, and take them both to the plate. In the 1930s, the cost was $1.65 for a box seat and $1.10 for a seat in the grandstand, and 50 cents for a spot in the bleacher. And you can tell that distinction by the photograph, where the expensive seats were and where the cheap seats were. The final years of Baker Bowl were not happy ones. The park reflected its tenants, pitifully downtrodden heap that always seemed on the verge of collapsing. Embers from passing locomotives would often fly onto the stadium roof and into the grandstands, and coal dust that billowed from the trains made Baker Bowl a dirty, grimy mess. The park actually had begun to deteriorate long before the final years. Even by 1915, the park was showing its age. Owner William Baker had to go to considerable expense to spruce up the place for the World Series. By the 1920s, the hump was being described as the dump. The stands were falling apart, and even the flagpole had been split in half after being struck by lightning. There was no excitement, and nobody was ever there. In its final years, Baker Bowl drew scant crowds of Philly fans, and you can still see the cheap seats out in the outfield are more filled than the others. The end of the storied old relic was finally in sight. Red Smith wrote in the Philadelphia Record, "After more than 40 years in the rusty, cobwebby house of horrors known as Baker Bowl, the Phillies are preparing to pull up stakes. Having reached an agreement with Connie Mack to move to Shive Park, the Phillies played their last game at the Baker Bowl on June 30, 1938. Their opponent was the Giants, the same team the Phillies had faced when the ballpark opened 51 years earlier. The Giants won 14-1, scoring 9 runs in the third inning. Throughout its existence, the Baker Bowl was put to many uses, not all of them having to do with baseball. The Phillies were seeking ways all the time to produce extra income, none of all of them having to do with baseball. And one of the best ways to do that was by renting the park for other sport activities as well as for non-sporting events. The most prominent tenants of the park were the football Philadelphia Eagles. They played there for 3 seasons, starting with the first year of the franchise in 1933 through 1935. During that time, they compiled a 13-11-1 home record. The first home game in their history was on October 18, 1933, against the Portsmouth Spartans. An estimated crowd of 1,750 watched the Eagles lose 25-0 in what was one of the 2 night games that season. Rented portable lights were used. Although they averaged less than 10,000 per game, the Eagles packed in 18,000 fans for the last game of the Baker Bowl against the New York Giants. College and high school football played frequently at Baker Bowl too. Boxing was also a popular venue at Baker Bowl. Negro League teams, especially the Hilldale Daisies from Darby, Pennsylvania, often played there in the 1920s and 30s. On October 1st, 1925, Hilldale faced the Kansas City Monarchs in the first game of the Negro League World Series. A sellout crowd of 18,000 saw the game. Baker Bowl was also used for something called donkey baseball. And after the Phillies moved out, midget auto racing and ice skating became popular. A real estate syndicate with plans to convert the 200,000 square foot block into a two-story building with stores and office buildings, much like a modern mall, bought the park in 1944 for $150,000. The plan never materialized, nor did subsequent plans for other use. The federal government even had plans to build a new mint there. For a while, Baker Bowl served as a used car lot. The remains of the park were hit twice more by fires in 1943 and 1950. Then also in 1950, a storm knocked down part of the outer wall, leaving a pile of bricks and other rubble across 15th Street. What remained was demolished shortly thereafter. In 1956, the property was sold for $400,000 to another developer, whose plans also never materialized. Later parts were carved up and sold for commercial use. There's no clue where that on that site stood a ballpark other than this Pennsylvania historical marker that stands on Broad Street just north of West Huntington Street. And it reads, the Phillies Baseball Park from its opening in 1888 until 1938, rebuilt 1895. Hailed as the nation's finest stadium, site of the first World Series attended by a U.S. president, 1915, Negro League World Series, 1924-26, Babe Ruth's last Major League game, 1935, Rays, 1950. The marker was dedicated on August 16, 2000 at Veterans Stadium during an on-the-field pregame ceremony. The marker was displayed at the Vet through the end of the 2000 season, and then moved to the location of the ballpark just behind where the right field foul pole would be. And so ends the saga of the Baker Bowl and the famous hump. Okay, I think we have time for some questions. Yes.
After the fire of 1894, they didn't go to with the A's. They went to the University of Pennsylvania.
They played
7 games at the
32nd
Spruce.
Okay, the source I had said for some reason they went to Shive Park.
It wasn't built yet.
Yeah.
The tall building on some photos, is that the Dara building factory?
Yeah. And any of you who have taken the train like I did to get here, it comes in very nearby where that is. Yes.
The official name of the park was Philip the National League Park. When was it ever officially called Baker Bowl?
Well, it was given the name by Mr. Baker who bought the club, so I assume as long as he was the owner, it was called the Baker Bowl. Yes?
Was there one time called the Yellow Jacket Speedway?
That I didn't run across.
Sir, can you say a little bit more about the detail of donkey baseball?
Donkey baseball is also played as donkey basketball, and what it is the players are on donkeys, and they have to play the game on donkey back. It's a lot of fun. Our high school had a fundraiser one time. They had a donkey basketball game, and it was a lot of fun, except for the cleanup.
Can you elaborate railroad tracks and the outfield again? I didn't quite understand.
It went underneath a tunnel underneath the outfield, and it raised it 10 feet difference from home plate, and the trains would actually go under there, and players, as I say, could feel the trains rumbling under, and you know, it shook the whole area.
With regard to that hump, was it 10 feet up all the way, or was it an actual hump? So if you were playing really deep, you kind of were looking over a hump.
Yeah, it was a hump that rose from home plate to the top of the hump. It was a 10-foot rise.
Right, so there was no downslope.
Right.
You could actually stand at one knee-high and put your elbows on the top of the left field wall. They had to build up the whole North Street wall because everyone was walking up the street watching the game. 12 feet.
Yes.
Of course, Chuck Klein holds the all-time record for out-of-field assists with 44, getting balls bouncing off that short right field fence and throwing it into the infield.
If you saw in that picture with the metal facing on it, there were dents all over the place from it being hit by the balls. Yeah.
So basically, so I understand a gentle slope up. There is no part where you're running flat and then you had to run up.
Right, it didn't immediately go to 10 feet. It was a slow rise to 10 feet.
Okay. And why the Phillies left, in the middle of the season like that?
Basically because the park was getting in condition that I guess they couldn't no longer keep it up. Yes.
Is that the park where Boom Boom Back got his nickname?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was
the
middle. Yeah, you wanted to know what kind of a sound it would make hitting off that wall. I imagine it'd be a metallic, bang, because it was mostly metal. There was a wire and pipe fence on the top of it. One more. Yeah, we'll make this the last one.
The home team always took the bullpens were down in the clubhouse. And the home team always took the right field bullpen so that the players there could wave a towel if the ball was going to be hard to play coming off the wall and the opposition couldn't do that.
Okay, well, thank you.